Welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington on this live broadcast from Studio 14. Here are some of the top stories making news across South Sudan this Monday, February 20, 2023. Sudanese political groups amend the Juba Comprehensive Peace Agreement.
If peace has not been a central and a crucial role on the issues of security, stability, and development, we would have not been pursuing it.
And the World Food Program receives donations to feed millions of South Sudanese.
After June, there will be no food aid. That's why I was asking earlier on whether this is a continuing budget or a new one.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Parties today, parties to Sudan's Juba Peace Agreement have amended the implementation matrix for the October 2020 peace deal. Sudan and South Sudanese leaders witnessed the signing of the matrix in Juba. Dengai Deng has more for VOA from Juba.
The Sudanese transitional government and several opposition groups under the Sudan Revolutionary Front signed the new implementation matrix Sunday and agreed to a two-year timetable for implementing the Juba peace deal. The parties agreed on the new timetable following a week-long workshop aimed at removing obstacles to implementing the peace deal. The workshop got underway on February 13th to evaluate progress made and challenges encountered in implementing the peace deal. Opposition parties which signed the matrix include the SPLM North faction led by Malik Agar, the Justice and Equality Movement under Jibril Ibrahim, the Democratic Union Party led by Eltom Ajo, and the Sudan Liberation Movement faction under Minini Minawi. One key issue in the matrix is security arrangements for Darfur, South Kordofan, and Blue Nile State. Another one deals with wealth and power sharing among opposition groups in central and northern Sudan. At the signing ceremony in Juba's Freedom Hall, the head of Sudan's Transitional Sovereign Council, General Abdel Fattah al-Burhan, praised mediators with the South Sudan government and especially President Salva Kiir.
If peace has not been a central and a crucial role on the issues of security, stability, and development, we would have not been pursuing it. Therefore, we in the government of Sudan shall continue to follow any route that will bring peace, security, and stability across the country.
Al-Burhan reaffirmed his government's commitment to work with the signatories to fully implement the new matrix. The Juba Peace Accord was signed in October 2020 under Kiir's supervision, but little progress had been made in its execution. Two influential opposition figures, Abdul Wahid An-Nur, chairman of the Sudan Liberation Movement, and Abdul Aziz Al-Hilu, leader of the Sudan's People Liberation Movement North, both refused to sign the pact. President Kiir, who witnessed the signing on Sunday, says the new roadmap is not an attempt to renegotiate the 2020 agreement, but an effort to facilitate dialogue in a quest for lasting peace in Sudan.
As a Burundi, our shared historical values and common interests demand that we work for stability to ensure prosperity for our people. It is our desire for people in the Sudan that compels us to host numerous rounds of negotiations between the transitional government and various opposition groups. I would like to once again call upon General Abdelaziz Adam Azelu, the leader of the SPLM North, and General Abdelwahid Mamanur, the leader of the Sudan Liberation Movement, to seriously consider joining the Juba Peace Agreement.
Kiir said the government of Sudan can now engage in dialogue with holdout groups, other Sudanese political forces and civil society groups on how to achieve a comprehensive peace in Sudan. Sudan's de facto military leader Al Burhan landed in Juba Sunday morning, where he reportedly held bilateral talks with President Kiir before the signing ceremony. The talks were said to have focused on the deep-rooted relations between the two countries and to promote development. Stefani Kohuri, the officer in charge of the United Nations Integrated Transition Assistance Mission in Sudan, or UNITAMS, said implementation of the peace deal will transform Sudan and provide security besides unleashing new economic opportunities.
The UPA peace agreement represented a significant achievement that should be preserved. The lack of progress in implementing it quickly and effectively is a serious problem that must be remedied. Especially the agreement, the implementation of the agreement is important for communities in the war-affected and marginalized areas in Sudan. They have suffered enough and need peace.
Sudan has been mired in a political stalemate over the way forward ever seen a military coup in October 2021. General Abdel Fattah al-Burhan has been leading the country despite frequent protests by thousands of Sudanese demanding a civilian-led government. For VOA News, I am Deng Gaiding in Juba.
Leaders of the Sudan Liberation Movement are downplaying the impact of the newly signed Juba Peace Agreement implementation metric. The holdout groups say the new matrix will not solve political problems in Sudan. For VOA News, Michael Atit reports from the Sudanese capital, Khartoum.
The Sudan Liberation Movement and Army refused to sign the Juba Peace Agreement in October 2020, citing what it calls the illegitimacy of Sudanese transitional government to negotiate on issues affecting Sudan. Yesterday in Juba, Sudanese military leaders and representatives of different armed groups signed a new time frame for implementing the Juba Peace Agreement. But Muhammad Al-Nair, a spokesperson for the Sudan Liberation Movement, says the newly signed matrix will not help bring peace and stability in Sudan. He's speaking to South Sudan in Focus from the Ugandan capital, Kampala, earlier today. Al-Nair says the mechanism used during the peace talks leading up to the Juba peace deal were illegitimate to begin with.
What happened in Juba with signing new matrix for the implementation of peace process in Sudan confirms what we said, that it is not possible to achieve peace in Sudan through the traditional methods. Also, it confirms this peace has failed on the ground.
Al-Nair says the holdout group will only join the peace process if the government and all the political forces agree to participate in what he calls Sudanese-to-Sudanese dialogue. One key issue in the signed matrix is security arrangements for Darfur, South Kordofan, and Blue Nile State. Another is wealth and power sharing with opposition groups in central and northern Sudan. Al-Nair says the current process is not inclusive and therefore will not bear any fruit.
The framework agreement will not bring peace and stability. So this is an attempt to legitimize the coup. Most of Sudanese people and the real revolution forces reject this settlement. We will not recognize any government can't achieve all the goals of the revolution.
Speaking to this program in Khartoum earlier today, Sudanese political analyst Haj Hamad says full implementation of the agreement depends on international financial support, and signing a new matrix won't solve anything.
It is an internationally driven agreement, and the international community just put their signature to the paper and kept the resources with them. So what will happen for a third world country like Sudan and with the sponsor of South Sudan, and both are cannot afford to finance DDR or such kind of complex type of merging new institutions.
South Sudan President Salva Kiir on Sunday reiterated his call for SLM led by Abdul Wahid and SPLM North led by Abdulaziz Al-Hilu to join the peace process in Sudan. Michael Atit for VOA News, Khartoum.
The UN's World Food Program has received $289 million from the United States Agency for International Development to provide food aid to South Sudanese. Some internal displaced persons in the country say the aid comes at a critical time when thousands of families are affected by conflict. Wake Simon Wudu reports for VOA from Juba.
Most of the 50,000 internally displaced persons residing at the Protection of Civilians or POC site in Juba fled to the camp late 2013 when conflict broke out in the South Sudanese capital and quickly spread to the rest of the country. Juba IDP Lamjok Kubang says he and thousands like him have suffered since last August when the WFP stopped food distributions to IDPs. He says food rations resumed in January, but they are expected to end within 4 months.
After June, there will be no food aid. That's why I was asking earlier on whether this is a continuing budget or a new one. Because earlier, what we knew is that the current food distribution will end by June. But if this is a new budget, this can be a very good thing to people of South Sudan, especially the IDPs.
Juba IDP Mayen Gadluak is grateful to the U.S.
Really, we do appreciate the U.N. government, because the young nation, when we get the independence, we get through the end of United States community or government. And we love that because it's our friend as a nation.
Jock says each IDP receives 7.5 kilograms of sorghum per month, an amount he says is not enough. He says in 2013, when people fled to the POC site after the fighting broke out, each IDP received more than twice that much of sorghum a month. He says the POC block where he resides hosts at least 40,000 people, including 16,000 unregistered people who do not get any food rations.
There are people who came all the way from Upper Nile because of flooding. You will find in a family of 10 people, around 3 or 2 or 5 people are not registered to receive food aid.
USAID announced its $289 million donation to the WFP on Friday. The WFP says 7.76 million people in South Sudan expected to be in crisis or face worsening levels of hunger this year. Mary Ellen Magroti, the WFP country director in South Sudan, says receiving funding in advance ahead of the country's rainy season means WFP can act earlier to prevent families from falling into more severe levels of acute hunger.
A fourth year of record flooding, rising costs of food and energy, and ongoing conflict are disrupting lives and livelihoods and threatening to push millions of families further into hunger across South Sudan. This generous contribution from the United States comes at a critical time as we race to dispatch food assistance to the most remote areas ahead of the lean season.
WFP says the donation will support the delivery of food to more 2.2 million severely food insecure women, children and men across parts of South Sudan through this year. For VOA News, I'm Wake Simon Udu in Juba.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, the UN is asking South Sudanese authorities to criminalize child marriages. Find out why after the break.
South Sudan in Focus is now on WhatsApp. Send us a message on +1 202-630-8011. Tell us what's happening in your area or give us your feedback on the stories you hear on South Sudan in Focus. We look forward to hearing from you on WhatsApp. That number again, +1 202-630-8011.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. The regional director of the United Nations Population Fund for East and Southern Africa is calling on the South Sudanese leaders to do more to end gender-based violence and child marriages. For VOA News, Dengai Deng has more from Juba.
Speaking to journalists after visiting the Protection of Civilian Site, or POC, in Juba Friday, Lydia Zigomo, Regional Director of the United Nations Population Fund, or UNFPA, for East and Southern Africa, says South Sudanese leaders need to protect the country's children.
I would love to not see children, and I call them children, of aged 13, 12 and below having children. Because that is not going to lead to a progressive society. So we want to see women who are having children, having them at the right age, by choice, and with the right support. And that the men of South Sudan, and I do hear that there are some very progressive men's organizations in this country supporting that. Because once we do that, a healthy woman creates a healthy family, in turn a healthy community, and overall a healthy nation. And that's what we need to see in South Sudan.
Zigomo, who also participated in the recently concluded International Women's Leadership Conference in Juba, visited the Juba Teaching Hospital and the Juba POC site to see living conditions of internally displaced persons, or IDPs. Zigomo says girls and youth should have access to education, and peace does not only mean the absence of war.
I think one of the things that should, and I'm sure is happening, but maybe they need to continue to push for, is make the time to come out and speak to their people. Because I think the what I see is people are prepared to speak. They are prepared to speak out and say what is happening.
Zigomo says traditional and religious leaders also have a role to play in shaping culture and societal norms to foster peaceful society.
Peace is not just the absence of war or conflict. It's also about the absence of GBV, gender-based violence. So we really want to make sure that peace is understood in all its forms, and not just a focus on the political peace, but also peace in the homes and peace in relationships that people have with each other.
In some South Sudanese communities, young girls are still forced into marriage in exchange for cows. The price of a daughter determined in negotiations between her father and would-be husband is typically between 50 and 100 cows. UNFPA says it continues to support efforts in eliminating child marriage, including through its work with the government through educating men and boys to actively participate in the promotion and safeguarding of girls' and women's rights, and working with traditional chiefs. Though South Sudanese law limits marriage to those age 18 and over, the law is rarely enforced, particularly in rural areas. For VOA News, I am Deng Gaideng in Juba.
From Juba, we move to Upper Nile. Community leaders from Melut County say they received more than $3.5 million from the mandated 3% share of oil revenue in the last 2 years. In a report released over the weekend, the Melut community describes how the money was used, as we hear from Manyang David Mayar in Juba.
Peter Pagol, chairman of the Melut Community Development Committee, a body tasked to manage the county's oil revenues, says between 2020 and 2022, the county received $13.7 million. Under the 2012 Petroleum Act and the 2013 Petroleum Revenue Management Act, oil-producing states are allocated 2% of the oil revenues, while oil-producing communities get 3% of oil profits. Pagol says, from the time South Sudan became independent in 2011 up until 2019, his community received no oil revenue from the national government.
The problem has been that the account was not created and it was taken in the form of a loan by the national government. The Ministry of Finance has given us a report, including people and institutions that have taken our money. The amount is higher than this $13 million.
Melut County Commissioner Dengjo says the Melut Community Development Committee carried out a number of key developmental programs in the county with the money, including education.
We have recruited 170 teachers in Melut, and these teachers who teach our children each receive more than $600 per month. We went ahead to secondary school education. We started with the building of the school, and now we have 4 schools. 2 secondary school and 2 primary school.
Joe says the county also supported more than 270 university students and 13 students pursuing their masters. Before 2018, Melut County had one medical doctor. Now Joe says the county has contracted 4 medical doctors, 3 specialists, and has established 3 laboratories. The commissioner says local officials have had to battle corruption, with some individuals hoping to pocket the county's oil revenue. 25-year-old Melut County resident Thonchol says the county helped pay for his expenses while he was a university student and a scholarship in Egypt.
This committee of 3%, in fact, during COVID-19, they really stood with us, because by then Egypt was certainly shut down. By then, this committee of 3% with the county authority, they stood with Melut students in Egypt. By then, our number was over 130. They pay all the rents, they pay all the school fees by that time. In 2021, he provided us with air tickets. All his graduates were given air ticket to come to South Sudan.
In a first edition magazine published by Melut County officials, an expenditure graph shows 56% of the $13.7 million was spent on road infrastructure development, while 10% was spent on electricity. The least amount was spent on health care and humanitarian support. Stephen Dhiudao, chairperson for the National Revenue Authority and head of the Melut community, is urging county authorities to prioritize education and health care.
We need education to increase up to 30%. We, the people of Melut, have been backward in many things, especially in education, particularly in subjects like medicine, engineering. We need many people to support the 3% in these areas. After that, we need funding for the health sectors be increased.
Upper Nile State Governor James Odok says his state needs peace and unity to succeed.
Our people have suffered from the fight we created. What I need from you is that we should forget the past, but from now on, I don't want any citizen of Upper Nile to die again. All of us should work together and be peace ambassadors in Upper Nile State.
Odok says Upper Nile has been destroyed by its own people. Intercommunal violence is rampant in the state. Last December, the United Nations said more than 160 people were killed and over 20,000 people were displaced in Upper Nile following violent conflict between tribal community-based militia groups. For VOA News, I'm Anyang David Mayor in Juba.
Former U.S. President Jimmy Carter appears to be in failing health conditions. VOA's chief national correspondent Steve Herman has more from Washington.
Jimmy Carter on Saturday decided to spend his remaining time at home with his family and receive hospice care instead of additional medical intervention, according to the Carter Center. The organization, in a statement, said the family of the 98-year-old former president asks for privacy during this time and is grateful for the concern shown by his many admirers. The 39th president survived a metastatic melanoma cancer diagnosis in 2015 and a serious fall at home 4 years later. Steve Herman, VOA News, Washington.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The United States strongly condemns the unilateral decision by Sudanese authorities to release the specially designated global terrorist Abdel Raouf Abu Zayed. Abu Zayed was convicted, along with others, of murdering U.S. diplomat John Granville and Sudanese citizen Abdel Rahman Abbas, both employees of USAID, in Khartoum in 2008. John Granville was 33 years old when he was gunned down in the terrorist attack. He had have been working on democracy and governance programs for USAID in support of a landmark peace agreement that ended Sudan's long civil war. Abdul Rahman Abbas, 39, was one of the original members of USAID's Disaster Assistance Response Team for Darfur. Abu Zayed was convicted and sentenced to death for his involvement in the killings. On January 30, 2023, the Sudanese Supreme Court released him. State Department spokesperson Ned Price said, "The Sudanese claim that the Granville family had extended forgiveness is false. We call on the Sudanese government to exercise all available legal means to reverse this decision and to rearrest Abu Zayed." In a written statement, USAID Administrator Samantha Power said, "The lack of transparency about the legal process that led to the release of John and Abdul Rahman's killer is unacceptable, and the assertion that the 2020 U.S.-Sudan bilateral settlement of legal claims constituted forgiveness for Abu Zayed is false and misleading. We will continue to push for full accountability, and I and the entire USAID family extend our deepest condolences to John and Abdul Rahman's families as they continue to endure the trauma of the killing of their loved ones," said Ambassador Power. "As we work to honor the memory of John and Abdul Rahman and pursue justice for their murders, we remain committed to the Sudanese people and their aspirations for a peaceful, democratic nation." State Department spokesperson Price noted that the United States continues to engage with Sudanese officials at the highest levels and to demand action on this critical issue. "The safety of U.S. citizens and embassy personnel abroad remains the highest priority of this administration," declared spokesperson Price. "We will not relent."
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
That's all we prepared for you on this Monday. We now leave you with the song Tali by Salif Keita. I'm John Tanza in Washington on this live broadcast from Studio 14. Don't forget to visit voaafrica.com for all your favorite programs and news updates. If you miss this program, go to www.voaafrica.com/South Sudan. Thanks for taking time to be with us. Remember to join us tomorrow for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.